And hello, hello, hello. Welcome back, everyone. We are back for a part two with Ukot. I'm so excited to continue where we left off. Ukot, welcome back. Maybe you can tell us how you've been since the last time we spoke.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's been a very, very busy few weeks for me here. That's all I can think of, the amount of work that fills my days with juggling co-create Africa and my full-time job and a young family.
Yeah, I bet. It's funny, you know, I have some notes here, and that was one of the things I was gonna bring up, how you're juggling raising children with all these other commitments. But we'll get there. So, you know, so far we've talked about co-create Africa, we've talked about your journey to where you are now, we've talked about lots of different things, and we kind of left off at hearing a bit more about the shyness inside the home versus the shyness outside the home. Do you remember that part?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I
perfect.
Do.
Okay, well, I think we're ready to hear more about that. So, if I'm not mistaken, you were saying you were shy outside of the home and not shy inside of the home, or maybe it was the other way mm-hmm. around. But I think it's the first step, the first bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. What was that like? Why do you think that was the case, and has that changed?
I'm wondering if I have the answers just okay. yet, but I do know that what that looked like was me coming home and literally taking charge and being this really talkative young person. And I am the last of my parents' children, but my siblings sure did feel my presence. Like my sister, I have a sister who still tells stories of how much of a of a pain in the behind I was. Like there's a story she tells, like if you said to me, "I'm going to smack you," I'd leave wherever I am and come smack you first. And whenever she says that, I'm like, well, I've always been proactive. I don't wait for things to happen. Anyway, so that's the kind of like really active person that I was in the house. But I realized that outside, I was more reserved. I didn't you know, take to the stage or the forefront of things readily, especially in those growing years. I was shy around my peers. I was shy, you know, to go on stage. But then there was always that conflict within me because I wanted to be on stage. I like to sing. I don't know if I mentioned that.
No, you have so not mentioned that.
I like to sing. So maybe in a situation where there was an opportunity to sing, maybe in a fellowship or in church, I would put my name down to go and give a special number, as it was called, and then I'd go back to my seat and say, well, this is the opportunity to either have the ground swallow you or you're going to go up there and you're going to sing. And so I look back now and I say I was my own coach mm-hmm. through coming out of shyness, because I knew it wasn't serving me, and it's something that stayed with me even into university days. I remember a friend of mine saying to me during one of those choir practice sessions in my fellowship in university, shyness doesn't suit you, leave it. You know, she was that kind of person that was always very matter of fact and very straight to the point. So leave it, it doesn't suit you. It's not serving you in any way. And I just remember looking at her like, that's easy for you to say. You know, and there was always that conflict within me because I knew that I could be more, I could be better, but I did struggle with shyness. And if I can just go on to say how I overcame shyness.
Of course.
So I co-founded the Life Skills Experts with a man called Omakwishe Barrow, and that's where I believe I dropped shyness for good, because we had to facilitate trainings for children. I mean, with children, it was a bit easier because, well, I am older than them. So it wasn't much of an issue until we had to start facilitating those life skills sessions for teachers so they could go on to implement them with their students. And I remember him saying, for the very first session we're going to have with this group of teachers, oh, I'm going to take this first part of the training and you're going to take the other part. And this was like the evening before. We had worked together to develop the content, so I knew the content.
Right.
And then he just dropped that on me and I thought, oh my goodness. I think I had mentioned he would like to say you either sink or swim whenever something is thrown at you. So I told my, I just, you know, told him there, well, this is one of those situations and I'm choosing to swim. And that next day, through the nervousness, you know, everything that was going on in my mind, I got up in front of those people and I did what I had to do. And it was at that point I realized, oh, you can do this, you know, it's not so bad. And so I really grabbed onto that experience and all of the experiences that came after that as my way to work, and you know, as my tool to work my way out of shyness. And many, many facilitations later, and learning that even the best of us still get nervous, mm-hmm. you know, before those big moments, and learning that if you could think of that as excitement and your body telling you this is important and you're taking this seriously, and you can use that energy instead of letting it work against you, you can actually ride that energy and bring your best to that moment. It was through learning all of that that I realized I could overcome shyness, and I did.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's awesome. So I'm guessing you don't plan to be shy ever again, or at least not to the same degree.
No, not at all, because I honestly don't see how it helps me in any way, considering all the things I want to do. Shyness doesn't serve me at all, and so I'm glad that it's something that I can say is in the past.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You know what? Now that we've talked, you've told us a bit about the shyness and how you've overcome it. This is actually a good segue into family life. I'll see if I can tie this back into family life. Do you notice your children? Do you notice shyness in either one of them or all of them? Or to what degree do you notice that? And maybe just similarities that you notice in them that you can kind of look back and compare to yourself and your siblings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do see shyness in certain situations. And with everything that I know, I'm being very deliberate about letting them know that they can, you know, be completely free with themselves and not allow shyness. So, for example, I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and sometimes I have my 5-year-old just climb on a box and make speeches.
That's great.
Yeah, and we have concerts in the house where we just go up the staircase and sing. We set up the four chairs around our dinner table, line them up in 2 rows, and you know, that's the audience. And
that's amazing.
People go up the staircase to sing. I should do that more often, but these are things we've done, and it's just a way of letting them know the whole concept of being on stage, people are watching you, and you being comfortable with that scenario. So I'm not forceful to say, hey, don't be shy, you can't, you know, but whenever I notice that, I find subtle ways to just let them know that you don't have to shy away from things, you don't have to hide behind mommy when you meet someone and you're not sure what to say. It's okay to be unsure, but you know, still take a step forward and be bold and
mm-hmm.
you know, speak up.
That's amazing. It sounds like you're really pulling from your own experiences and giving your children the experiences and tools that will prepare them for life when they're older.
Yes. And that propels me to be in something I also do with them to encourage them to be themselves is I let myself be silly around them. I do funny things. And I'm being very deliberate about that because I know that in doing that, they too will see an example. Or like, if mommy can be silly, I can be silly. If mommy can be funny and not be shy in front of us, I can do the same. So that's something that I do. Like, I do funny dances or sing in a silly way, or, you know, and they tickle and they laugh, but I know that it's leaving an impression on them.
Absolutely.
I can also be like, be myself and be relaxed around people.
You're literally expressing and embodying examples, which is the best way to learn. It's absolutely the best way to learn. That is absolutely incredible. So let's dive in. How do you, Ukot, juggle all of these commitments that you have? You have a full-time job. You know, you have a relationship, you have children, you are an entrepreneur, you're building incredible businesses. How do you do it?
Oh my goodness. It's a lot of waking up early to have meetings at 4:30 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
With people in Nigeria. yeah, I mean, the time zone is serving me. Because that early here is actually 10 a.m. about that time in Nigeria. So I'm able to, you know, do stuff between maybe 4 and 6 or 7. And then I switch into school prep mode. And then I switch to 9 to 5 mode. And then in the evenings, I still have other things going on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but I do try to get into bed around 9 p.m. So by the time I wake up at 3:30, thereabouts, it's 6 hours of sleep for me.
Mm-hmm. Man, that is a lot. That is a lot. Because I'm also thinking about, you know, errands. I think often when we have conversations in general about juggling things, we often forget to mention the very practical day-to-day errands that are part of normal regular life, mm-hmm. like doing laundry, you know, mm-hmm. washing dishes, mm-hmm. cleaning the mm-hmm. space that you live in, you know, getting dressed, personal hygiene, like mm-hmm. all of these things, you know, they require time, you know, so mm-hmm. it's not as though all of the hours, you know, all of the time in between, you know, with you, for example, you get up, you start your day with Co-Create Africa, then you do school prep for your kids, and then you go into your 9 to 5, and then you do other things, you know, then you have dinner and you wind down and go to sleep and you start your day over again. But all of the in-between moments, those are the only moments you have to do everything else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's a lot. And I think, I hope that you're patting yourself on the shoulder for being able to manage so many different things. Yeah, I mean, first of all, your children are 5 and 2. So I imagine that this is still a relatively new experience for you in terms of being able to juggle all of these things. Just tell us about this journey, you know, how that has impacted your organizational skills, your time management skills, because I'm sure it has. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it definitely has, because I'm really learning to be mindful and be present and focus whenever I'm, you know, doing something, because I know that if I don't do that, then the time for that passes and the next thing has to happen. So yes, it has really helped, because back in Nigeria, I had live-in help and I could just pour myself into work and, you know, check in on the kids from time to time. But here, there's nothing like that. So
You are the living help.
Yes, I'm living help with my husband. And I must say that, you know, just being able to have that support and have someone to share those chores and things you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier with is really a big help. So in terms of time management, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I've reflected on that just recently and thought, wow, I'm really getting better at just focusing. Like, it's corporate Africa time, so this is what we're doing. It's thought exchange time, so this is what we're doing. Of course, there's still room for even more improvement in all this, but yeah, my time management has definitely improved significantly.
Gotcha. So it sounds like when you get started on each of these things, you really kind of hunker down and focus on the thing in front of you, and you mm-hmm. don't really let yourself get distracted by other things.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that process for you like a very deliberate one? You know, how do you keep yourself from not getting distracted, for example? Like, because, you know, mm-hmm. it's easier said than done to sit, yeah. you know, and just focus on Co-Create Africa when maybe you have other things running through your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's for me, it's about, I mean, it's really a good question because there's indeed an underlying reason, and it's about value. So, for example, let me look at the 9-to-5 side of things, my work at Thought Exchange. It's easy for my mind to wander and think about all the things I would love to get done with Co-Create Africa, but then I tell myself, if I'm here and I'm earning from this company, I want to add value. I don't just want to tick a box or just show up and mark time. Mm-hmm. You know, my time here has to be one that is adding value to the organization in exchange for the value that I'm getting from them. So that's how I'm able to hold myself accountable to not, you know, doing that one extra task I could be doing with Co-Create Africa. Yes, I've come to accept that things may not move as quickly as I'd like them to, but then that's the trade-off that I'm making, and I'm very clear about that.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Let's dive in a bit deeper there. You know, because you've mentioned you want your time to add value. So your presence and your attentiveness to anything that you're focusing on, you know, you want to make sure that you're adding value. And so distractions would obviously take from that. But why is this your approach? Why is this important to you?
Why is adding value important to me? You know, that's a good question because it's something I say regularly. I say this often. I'm like, if I'm not adding value in a place, I don't want to be there. If I'm not adding value, I don't want to. I mean, it's something I've said, like, if I feel like I'm not adding value, then I'd rather not have the job. Like, I can't take the salary and I can't enjoy the money you get because I will feel like it's stolen or, mm-hmm. you know, if I didn't contribute something to earn that income. So, and it's not just in paid situations. It's a reason why I've left certain things, even volunteer, you know, things I may have voluntarily joined because maybe other commitments have come up and I can't give that thing my full attention, then I would respectfully like step away. Mm-hmm. I can't just be in a space and be a number. Like, I have to be contributing, making a difference, adding value. If not, it's best that I'm not there.
Mm-hmm. So why? Why? God, why?
Yeah, I kind of knew that you were going to do another why. Oh my. Honestly, I don't know. Is it upbringing? Is it? I guess it's my values, like my belief system. Like, life should be about giving and contributing. And I mean, if you go on my LinkedIn, it's like who I am is a question that I have considered for the longest time, because early in life I got to sit under people that talked a lot about purpose, and you know, it was always a question for me, like, why am I here? And then I found that I'm somebody who is constantly having ideas and so on, and so I had that struggle for a long time, like, so which one am I supposed to focus on? What is my contribution in this world? Mm-hmm. You know, so that those are questions I had. You know, when people say, oh, find your purpose, find the one thing. I kept saying, what's my one thing if I'm having all these ideas? And then I met someone who said, find the link, the thread that links everything that you want to do. And so I started considering that, okay, I want to do X, Y, Z, Q, R, M. What's the thread? And so these are questions that I kept asking myself over time until I realized, oh, I'm all about serving people. I'm all about development, you know, change, social development, and so on. And so that's how I've been able to distill who I am into three words: catalyst for change. So I don't know if that answers that why question, but it's been this long process of trying to just understand me and my reason for being put here on it.
That is amazing. Thank you. You did a great job answering the why question there. I'm smiling because I love the answer, you know, and I love that you've distilled it down to such a simple sentence, you know, catalyst for change. I think that's absolutely incredible. And I'm also smiling because I could hear one of your kids in the background. And I think that really adds to it. No, I think it's great. It adds to the experience. I think it's lovely. Wonderful. So you are a catalyst for change. You know, you're definitely value driven. Everything that you do is based on your values, which is incredible and great. And you're certainly having an impact and you know, making impressions on probably everyone that you come across or comes across you. Let's shift over to your, you know, your relationship. How do you keep, well, you know, how do you... I guess, you know, because catalyst for change, with that, I'm thinking that makes sense in the context of, you know, professional work, anything mm-hmm. sort of externalized. What about in the home? How do your values reflect in your relationship with your husband and your relationship with your children? We've heard a bit about, you know, how you do that with your children, but I guess I'm curious, you know, as a woman, what's the role that your identity plays?
Mm-hmm. Well, Gabriela, you ask the most interesting questions that make one, you know, you're making me dig deep into my soul.
That's the point.
Right. Thanks for asking that question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does my personality play into my home? Well, I just want to talk about that value, and I know that for my relationship to be sustainable and stand the test of time, there has to be value that I'm bringing into it, and being very deliberate about that, because marriage is long term, right? If you're in it to death do us part,
right?
So I'm deliberate about being the kind of partner that I would want to spend the rest of my life with. Doesn't mean I'm perfect. Doesn't mean that we don't have our fights and our disagreements, but. So I think my best definition of love that I've come across is two people who want to be together so much they'll do anything to make that happen. And I will say I've been blessed with a partner that I believe we both share that sentiment. And so through the fights, through the hard days, we know that there's nowhere else to go, and we still work our way back to each other. That's one side. The other side is also being deliberate about making time for each other, you know, doing the little things on days that are not vows to show each other that we care, you know, making, like, planning time together into our schedule, and just being deliberate about keeping the romance and I'm looking for a word, like, the sparkles alive, because being married, the sparks, you know, because being married and waking up every day to chores and screaming children can really take a toll on your relationship. But yeah, we're in this for the long haul, and we do whatever we can to make it a little easier for each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like you're both committed, and you're both very deliberate. And I've heard you use this word a few times now, the deliberateness. It sounds mm-hmm. like that's really also a thread in your life, I might say. Mm-hmm. You know, it does sound like you're very intentional about the choices that you make and the actions that you take, and you know, where you focus your attention and your energy and your time. And I think that certainly goes a long way. I'm curious about, and this is a two-part curiosity, if you will. I'm curious about, you know, what about the times when, I'll give you some context. You know, this curiosity is coming from a place of acknowledging that, you know, though being deliberate and intentional carries a ton of weight and is super valuable and has tremendous impact, it's also a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people get either burnt out or they get tired or something happens. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering, do you ever get tired? Do you ever find yourself in, you know, having moments where it is really hard to keep going or, you know, to take that next step? And if so, what is your support system like?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the relationships or my life in general?
In general.
Okay. So, do I get tired? Yes, definitely. There's hardly a day that goes by. I mean, some not every day, but let's say 6 out of 10 days, I ask myself, why? Why do you care? Why are you building Co-Create Africa? You know, your life would be so much easier if you could just have the job and just focus on family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, usually this is at the end of the day when I'm exhausted and I'm like, you know, if you eliminated these extra hours of work, you'd have so much more time for sleep and TV and putting your feet up and all that. But then I've seen the other side of inaction. Uh-huh. And I remind myself, remember when you decided to put things on pause, which I did when we first came to Canada. I was trying to still carry forward things and keep things going. And then I told myself, look, this is a major life change. You really need to pause certain things. And I did that for a number of months. But then towards the end of last year, I got back into things. I organized a webinar. And since then, I've kept going. And there was always that question, like, will this be another start and stop? And I kept telling myself, well, I'm doing it. I'm waking up every day and I'm doing it. And I'll keep doing it until and see where it goes, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are certain ways that I hold myself to getting stuff done. And one of them is either signing up for things that will keep me on, you know, focus. For example, with Co-Create Africa, I did sign up for an incubator because I knew that having that would provide me with some structure and some guidance and some level of accountability to build something of value and not just, you know, something based on my limited knowledge and so on. And then setting timelines, like most of the work I do is external and has involves people, so I set up webinars and things, and I put a date, you know, in the future, and I know that once I've put out that date on, say, social media and so on, I'm going to follow through. So that also keeps me in line. So do I get tired? Yes. Why do I keep going? Because I have seen the other side of inaction, and I know that I will not have the peace, you know, that I desire if I'm not doing anything about this dream and vision and passion that burns within me.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So I want to get back for a second to you know, the support system in terms of, so you do things like sign up for an incubator, or, you know, you try to set up structures so that, you know, you're held accountable and you have reason to actually get certain things done, which is completely sound and makes sense. And I'm wondering a bit beyond that in terms of, you know, having people that you can turn to for support or mentorship, and what's the role that you think that plays in your life?
Support and mentorship. Mentorship has played a major role in my life. Going back to Omar Bishai Baru that I mentioned earlier, when we established the company at the time, it was a clear mentorship relationship because he had all these, he had, you know, made all this progress and had all these years of experience. And I was, you know, fresh out of university. So that experience was really a foundation for me to learn from this person. And it really built my professional identity to an extent. Like, that's when I started to see myself as a learning designer. And, you know, that has just been the trajectory for me. So I really have benefited from mentorship. And till today, I still have mentors in different spheres. I have mentors in tech sales. I have mentors in business and building a startup. And I have a sister who is like my go-to person for bouncing off ideas and just talking about what I'm doing and getting that quick feedback that I may not be able to get from somebody that I would have to maybe schedule time with and so on. So I consider that a real blessing to have somebody within my family that gets what I'm doing, gets where I'm going, and is able to provide support in the moment. So that's a huge one for me. And again, speaking about the support system, all the things that I do, being able to show up here now at this time of the day is really, you know, made possible with the huge support from my husband, who I'm able to say, hey, I'm going into a meeting, and he's going to make sure the kids are quiet, yeah, or something. Or like even attending the incubator sessions, the startup incubator sessions that happen in the evenings. This is time when kids need to be showered, teeth brushed, you know, put in bed. So having that support allows me to take on some of the things that I'm doing.
Fantastic. I think your answers are definitely giving us a very holistic idea of what your life is like, which I personally really appreciate. And the reason I appreciate it is because often you know, when we hear about success stories, mm-hmm. we typically hear about the overnight thing that happens. We hear about mm-hmm. how a person went from A to B, or rather from A to Z pretty quickly. And we don't often talk about everything in between, and also the day-to-day aspects of what yeah. that is actually like, because even the most successful, you know, most influential people on the planet still have day-to-day things that they have to do, that's just part of their life. There's not really a whole lot you can do to get around that, unless, you know, you pay someone to do literally everything, including brushing your teeth. But even then, you know, it would take time to do that. You know,
yeah, to show up for the teeth.
Yes, exactly. It's not as though you can eliminate that thing from your life. It still has to take place. You know, you mm-hmm. can just kind of minimize your participation in a lot of mm-hmm. things. And mm-hmm. and in many ways, we live in a very convenient world where we can minimize participation in many ways. But, you know, that doesn't mean we can just get rid of them altogether. Mm-hmm. Still have to do them. Okay, so I have two more topics that I'd like to bring to the table. One is, you know, very simple, which I think you'll probably have an easy time answering, because I think a lot of it you've already shared. And that topic is self-care. You can tell us a bit about that in a moment. And the other one is a topic that's a little more taboo. And I'm beginning to try to get people to talk about this more, because I think, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of very integral to our day-to-day life and society in general. And yet, you know, we'll talk about it in a second. Let's start with self-care and then I'll do the big reveal.
Okay. Whew, self-care. I'm sure I don't do it enough, but sleep is so important based on the schedule I just described. And I try to sleep when my body says sleep and try to get at least 6 hours. For me, that's major because it allows me to wake up refreshed and ready to put in another day. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I'm leaning into is just having me time, no matter what that me time is, but this is time that I know I'm just focused on me, whether it's doing my hair or my nails or just doing something. Because one thing I've noticed is with us women, it's easy to just always have something else, something mm-hmm. other to be doing. So that's something I'm starting to be more deliberate about. And honestly, I'm not doing much else than self-care, which I should be, but yeah.
Well, you know what? If some of the listeners have any ideas for you, I invite all of you to pass that information on. There's lots of ways to do self-care for sure. You know, for me, I think self-care really just boils down to what are the things that make you feel good mm-hmm. and make you feel comfortable and, you know, just like you're having a good time and enjoying yourself. And if that's, you know, doing your nails, you know, in your bedroom or something with some nice music in the background, then that's that. You know, maybe yes. it's going for a walk. Maybe it's lying down in the grass, you know, in the sun. Like for me, just going to the beach and being in the sun, well, anywhere really, just lying down with sun shining on me is a very enjoyable experience. I love the warmth of the sun. Mm-hmm. I love the way it feels, and it's very soothing and comforting, and I feel mm-hmm. very just kind of safe, like in a cocoon.
Stop.
But I'm outside. Ooh, looks, sounds like there's keep some chasing up. Going around. Mm-hmm. I love it. So I think self-care really is just about doing the things that make you feel good.
And yeah, you mentioned music, and that's major for me. Like sometimes when I'm, you know, I say I'm putting the kids through an assembly line in the morning. That's how I describe it, like brush, shower, dress up. I like to play music because that can be a stressful time where I'm trying to hurry them up. But when I have music playing, it helps to keep me in a good space where I'm just enjoying it. And they also enjoy the music. Even the 2-year-old has his favorite songs and is like, play this one. So, yeah, music is a major, major part of my self-care because it uplifts me. And I'm constantly also singing or humming a tune. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way. Music definitely speaks to the soul. And that's brilliant that you play music while doing things like brushing teeth and getting dressed. I think that's a brilliant strategy. And I hope all parents do something similar. Or maybe just sing your way through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, are you ready for the big reveal?
I can't wait.
Okay. I can hear the excitement in your voice.
More like the anticipation.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Anticipation. Well, so as I was saying, it's a topic that I personally feel in my experience, you know, is a conversation that not too many people have. Certainly for many of us in our upbringing, it wasn't something that, you know, you talked about. It was something that was kept kind of quiet or within the inner circle or inner structure of the family. And even then, it wasn't really spoken of. And I think, you know, that in combination with, you know, the lack of education and literacy in this particular topic, you know, has really set a lot of people up for challenges and struggles. And I think part of the process of really enabling people to change their situations with this topic, which I've still not named,
you know, have part fun. Of that, I can see you're having fun.
I am. It's you know, the literacy, the education, and you know, part of that is also being able to talk about it without shame or without it being the strange thing that you're not supposed to talk about. Mm-hmm. Okay, drum roll. The topic is, it is money. Money, money, money. I know you were not expecting that, were you?
Oh my goodness, Gabriela. Thank you for this thriller.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I'm sure you were not expecting that. I'm sure nobody was expecting that. I hyped that up a bit too much. But seriously, you know, like, people don't talk about money. They don't talk about what it means to have financial stability, what it means to be financially literate. You know, there's definitely been a trend of people going out there and educating themselves and arming themselves with financial literacy, which is great, but it's still not something that people talk about freely. And I don't understand why. I mean, I understand why, but I don't think it's necessary anymore. And so let's talk about that. Well, first of all, let's hear your first thoughts that come up now that I've kind of done this reveal.
My first thoughts are, it's funny that we don't talk about it enough when we're constantly thinking about it and doing something about it. I had a pastor back in the day who would say, you know what, guys, I'm not going to continue being shy about talking about money, because the moment you get out of that door, that's what you're going to be thinking about.
Exactly.
And it was so funny to hear him say that, because even though we all sat there looking pious and everything, he was absolutely right. Money literally runs our world because we have to exchange it for almost everything that we have. And so it's an important topic, and it's one that I am very intentional about for myself and for even the people that I serve with Co-Create Africa, because the simple mission of Co-Create Africa is to put money in the pockets of young Africans and really to democratize access to wealth on the continent, because I feel like Africa, and African youth have lived so long under not enough, under, because I mean, I grew up hearing how young people from the global north find it easy, and I see it's like to travel, to see the world, and I wish I could give that same opportunity to young Africans. Like, you know, just being fine and have enough to take care of yourself. And if you want to see the world, you can do that because you can pay your way. I mean, it's hard enough to have a passport from some of those countries and then not even having the money to pay your way through when you want to travel is something. So that's just one thing. But then those are the thoughts that come to my mind. Need to ensure that I am figuring this out and getting the literacy for myself and being able to share that with as many people.
Yes, yes. I agree with everything you've said so far. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. So now, you know, let's have a brief conversation about it. We don't have to go in depth, but, you know, how do you relate to money now? And, you know, is that different from how you've related to it in the past?
So I'm going to start. I mean, my mind just like did a flashback all the way to childhood.
Let's do it.
I don't know. Nobody taught me how to save, but I just grew up. I can't remember like my mom telling me, oh, save money because it's good to save. But that's how I grew up. I just knew to put money, maybe because I didn't want too many things, so it was easy for me to put money aside, put money away. And so that was my initial relationship with money, just this thing that you put away until you have something to do with it. And then, and I had, to be honest, I had siblings that took advantage of that. They knew that we could always have money somewhere. And they would call me and say, hey, any money for this and that? I have one particular sibling back in the day. After calling me to get some money, she's going to say, make sure you eat some food. Use some of your money and eat food, because she knows. I heard this quote when I was a child. Eat to live, don't live to eat. And I used to proudly say, oh, I'm one of those people that eats to live, not lives, you know. So I could go on without food until I am hungry, you know. But so she used to pick on that and make fun of me. But that was my initial relationship with money, just save it. But now I'm learning more about growing money, not just putting money away. I'm learning more about inflation and how the money just put away is actually losing value and things like that. And then moving here from Nigeria, it's a different system, it's a different financial literacy curve. So I'm learning all over again what it means to actually build wealth in this system, which is quite different from, I mean, it's not so different, but then it's a different system of thinking, the taxes and all of that. It's different, so I'm learning again what that would look like for me here.
That's awesome. That's great. So it sounds like you have always been a saver. You just always saved money, even if you had no reason to or nothing to actually do with it. You just kind of saved, and probably because you didn't really have anything to spend it on. You had no desires to spend it on anything. And then that still carried through. And then over time, you started to kind of inform yourself about the different ways of actually using savings. And, you know, now you're adapting to an entirely new set of rules and conditions and circumstances, you know, in a different country, which make up for different conditions in order to build wealth. And you're continuing to learn and you're continuing to do that. That is amazing. I think that answers the question. So I think now I want to open up the floor to you to share about anything that you want to talk about in the last few moments.
I just want to add something on the money topic that I also find that giving is something that it's not a struggle for me, and it's something that I am always, you know, asking myself, why is it that way for you? Why aren't you so concerned and worried about keeping and keeping more and more. And I don't know, like, I don't have a complete thought around that, but I just thought it's something worth mentioning. I am clear on the importance of, you know, putting aside money to be able to take advantage of investment opportunities, but I also find that I'm not afraid to give where I see that I am able to, and I'm in a position to help.
Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think that goes hand in hand with everything else you've shared so far about yourself. It definitely aligns with your values of being a catalyst for change, you know, because if you find yourself across from an opportunity to be a catalyst of change and that opportunity, you know, calls for money, I could see that how you would, you know, want to give the money that you've got or some of it because you're a catalyst for change. So I think that makes complete sense. It's totally a reflection of who you are. It says a lot about you. Who you are, and it's lovely. Well, Ukot, thank you for another a wonderful conversation. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure I can speak for all the listeners that, you know, we've learned a lot about you. And we've learned just how incredible of a human being you are, what an incredibly creative, ambitious, and resilient woman you are. And I'm sure what an amazing impact you're having as a mother and as a wife and as a business owner and a leader and a mentor. You know, there are just many, many ways in which you shine and your presence in this world is truly felt and appreciated.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. With that, that is the end of our episode. Do you have any final thoughts or goodbyes?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for asking. I'm just sitting here thinking I would be remiss if I don't share about my relationship with Jesus, which is really the foundation of who I am and my values and my decisions. And when you talked about self-care, after responding, I thought about the fact that having that 30 minutes every morning where I read my Bible and I have a moment to just reflect on what I'm learning and how I can show up better in the world because of all of these things. It's an important part of who I am. And if I didn't mention that, then I wouldn't have said it all.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I opened it up to any final thoughts.
Thank you.
Really glad that you shared that and that you remembered to share that. Because if you'd forgotten, then it would have been too late. You would have to come for another episode just to share that. So I'm glad you got a chance to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. I think it's definitely an important aspect of your life to highlight as well, because it clearly plays a significant and profound role in your life and who you are and how you show up as a person. And that's very, very important, regardless of, you know, what that self-care looks like or what the content, you know, what the religion looks like. Your relationship with, you know, the creator, and how that actually impacts your life, is an important one. So I understand the need for sharing that and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Once again, thank you, Ukot, and hopefully we'll see you again.
Thank you.